Which was another way in, what we talked about.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Ready to go? Okay. It's week four of our series, Triangles of the Soul, exploring the seven emotional layers of our human experience, making them meaningful and purposeful. So just to go through some of the things we spoke about last week first. We talked about how our forefathers, Abraham and Yitzchak, each one represented Chesed and Gevurah. And then because of that, one had Yishmael and the other one had Esav. But we expressed the importance of identifying each one separately because the goal is what we talked about last week, bringing them together, but you need to understand them separately first so that they don't blur the lines when they do come together. So we talked about the third one last week, Tiferet, which means beauty, harmony. Normally is referred to when you combine Chesed and Gevurah together, but it's not just a combination, because then it's just Chesed and Gevurah together. It's not a new thing. But we explained that Tiferet is something new. It's the ability to go deeper into the layer of the human experience, which is beyond ego, and therefore not be individualistic about if I'm a Chesed person, to be only Chesed, and a Gevurah person, to be only Gevurah, and so on. So it's the concept of going connecting to the deeper layer of the soul experience, where it's like the seed of the tree, where it contains the branches, the fruit, the bark, everything, but it's all one, it's all together, it's not competing with each other, so to speak. And that's why Tiferet is called MS, truth, because Tiferet is a response where you don't look to express what you're feeling, but you look to express the truth, what is needed. And if what is needed is me to connect to something that's not my normal default nature, I do that as well. It's also why it's called compassion, rachamim. Rachamim means that even though you're aware, rachamim means there is a gvura, there is a justice, there is an understanding of something is not being deserving, but at the same time we give the chesed, so again that's the tiferet idea. Okay, just a quick summary. So, just a couple of housekeeping things before we continue. First of all, just thank you for all those that have participated in the raffle, those who haven't, if you can do that, or see the office afterwards and so on. Next week is the 6th of June, there'll be a class. Just want to point out, the week after, there won't be one because it's Shavuot. So it's the second day of Shavuot. We'll continue after on the 13th, but in 2 weeks' time there won't be. It was on the 13th of of June there won't be a discussion because of Shavuot. Also, I wanted just to remind everyone, I'm sure you've seen the things that I sent out, but this Monday night, the 3rd of June, we're having a shiur at Sarah Boss's house. It's called Surrender, a Submission. Is that healthy? Talking about lots of interesting things. It'll be 7:15 for a 7:30 start. Come along. It's for men and women. It is for men and women, right? Shelley, it's men and women, right?
Yes.
So bring the men along as well. Okay. So today, I want to go through what we call, well, the first one, but let's give a bit of an introduction first. Looking at what we call the second triangle. If you just have a look at the other side of your handout, we talk about the 10 powers of the soul, so it goes right, left, middle three times. So the first is the triangle of intellect, which is the three layers of intellect, Chochmah, Binah, and Daat, which we haven't been exploring too much, but it's the three components of understanding and cognition and processing information. Then we have the world of emotion, which has in it the two triangles. So the one triangle we just spoke about, those are the three primary emotions, the Chesed, which is everything about love and giving, Gvura, which is everything about discipline and holding back, Tiferet is the ability to bring them together. That's the first triangle. Again, we've explained that they both express themselves in good ways, in bad ways, and of course our job is to channel it, channel the Chesed or channel the Gvura, whatever we're channeling, to be positive and to be healthy and to be expressed in a constructive and a good way. And then we start a second triangle. But the second triangle is very distinct from the first, as we're going to explain in a minute. And that's Netzach, which I've translated here as ambition, but actually has many, many translations, we'll soon see. Hod, which is also many translations, but I've translated here humility. And Yesod, which is bonding, connecting. And then the final one is Malchut. But today we're going to begin the second triangle. I'm going to look at the first one, Netzach. But I want to, before we look at Netzach, I want to explain what the difference between the second triangle and the first triangle is. I mean, the second emotional triangle and the first emotional triangle, what it actually is. So in a nutshell, the first triangle of the six emotions, or seven emotions, is called emotional traits, emotional midot, emotional powers. The second triangle is more what we call functional midot, functional powers. So let's understand that. So the first three ones, like we talked about love, let's talk about Chesed and Gvura, for example, right? These are strong feelings of love, compassion, giving, kindness, or fear, or holding back, or self-control. But they are called emotions for a reason, because they come and they're inspired by very strong feelings of the way we respond to the outside world. So we might have thought about it, or we might have heard a good lecture, or seen a beautiful story, or something has happened, and suddenly we have the surge of emotion. I've got to go out and show love. I've got to increase love. I've got to increase kindness. I've got to be disciplined. I've got to hold back from unhealthy living. I've got to hold back from things that are immoral, or whatever it is, right? So they're normally feelings. Chesed and Gevurah is not the action. I mean, even the second triangle is not the action, but it's not. They're actually feelings. They're feelings of kindness. They're feelings of compassion, of holding back, of chesed, or guru, or both, or whatever, etc., etc. Which then, hopefully, eventually, inspire, of course, action. But the it's the feeling that inspires the behavior, right? Now, what does that mean? So, it's what we call in Kabbalah the word Meshichat HaNefesh. When my soul is drawn to something, right? That's what a midah is. That's what an emotion is. When my soul is drawn to something, for whatever reason. It might be something that I see in that person or see that experience. It might be something I was taught. It might be a processing thing, whatever the case is. But chesed and the gvura, when a person is really expressing chesed and gvura, right? They're expressing strong emotion. They're expressing something that is driving them, some passions that excite, which is why that's so important. Because emotions, we explained in the first time, that emotions are really important for the human experience, because it's what brings relationship, it's what brings love, it brings right the feelings of great love, the feelings of great respect. It brings passion, it brings excitement, it brings enthusiasm. That's why it's so important. However, one thing we know about strong emotion is that it's not constant. It comes and goes. Emotions are actually very up and down. Convictions aren't. A person might believe in something strongly and permanently. But emotions, getting excited, we don't get excited about everything all the time. I mean, there are a few people that you know that are extremely emotional human beings, which are not very hard, which are hard to tolerate sometimes. They are always excited. Right? Children are like that a bit, because children are one bundle of emotion. But mature adults are actually not. That's the truth, right? Which is a good thing and a bad thing, as we'll see. Which means, therefore, that the power of chesed and gevura is a strong drive. Its weakness is its lack of permanence. It's easy to, right? This can be, by the way, in anything. Now, that strong drive of chesed and gevura, it can come from various reasons. It can come from, in fact, the normal structure of the human being is that it's born out of cognition. That's why we have the first triangle, the triangle of intellect, where we understand something, we think about something, we learn about something, and suddenly we become very excited about it, right? How many times do parents go to a parenting lecture and that's it, it was a good speaker, and they come away and they're just fired up. They're going to be the best parents from now on. And then something happens, it doesn't last, right? The next day the kid says something disrespectful and boom, out the window. All the lectures, all the books, everything out the window, right? Because sometimes, it was good because it was inspirational and it came and it was came from a very, very thought out and a very, very intellectually resonating kind of experience, but it doesn't last. People fall in madly in love, romantically so. Does romance last all the time? Can a person say that every single day of the year, every minute of the day they're in a romantic relationship? I don't think so. It comes and goes. Sometimes someone else annoys you and the romance kind of weakens a bit, right? And that happens. We don't have the same. This happens spiritually, psychologically, whatever. Every area of our life. It happens in relationships. It happens in our own struggles. Sometimes we're very committed and very excited about working on our anger management, working on our jealousy. But we don't have that drive all the time. It's very hard to maintain that excitement. Excitement is great, and excitement normally propels us into some level of action. But excitement and passion and real feeling of emotion, full-blown expression of emotion, is so important. But it doesn't last. It's not always there. And sometimes, normally, what happens is it actually needs to be reignited all the time. And it's very hard to reignite it sometimes. Sometimes you have to go back and you have to think why I was so excited about it. Sometimes you have to learn about it. Again, right in Kabbalah, we have this idea called hitbonenut. Hitbonenut is something that people do before they pray, where they really try to internalize, you know, the greatness of Hashem and living a life of purpose. Why? Because prayer, for those that, you know, go on a higher level to pray really intensely, prayer is a process where we're supposed to reignite every day that concept of love of Hashem and fear of Hashem. Because that's also, our relationship with God is also supposed to be based on good emotion. We have a mitzvah in the Torah of Ve'ahavtat Hashem, we say in the Shema, Ve'ahavtat Hashem alakecha, you should love God, love all your heart, all your soul, so on, right? That's an emotion, that's a feeling. But we've got to keep reflecting. We've got to keep meditating, we're going to keep internalizing the ideas. Doing it once a month is not good enough. It's got to be daily. It's got to be often, because emotion doesn't last. Strong emotion, intense emotion doesn't last. Even negative emotions don't last, right? How long can you be angry for? Person gets very, very angry. I mean, some people might get angry for a long time, but most people, even they get angry, which is very destructive. I mean, they might get angry again tomorrow because they have an anger management problem, but they're not always angry. Even anger dissipates after a while, right? And that's even a negative thing, which is based on our ego. Normally things that are egocentric last longer. It's very hard. It's harder to be humble than it is to be egocentric. But nevertheless, even egocentric things don't last forever, because emotion, the nature of strong, intense emotional feelings, are things that don't last forever, right? You know, I'll give you an example, just a very interesting halachic example. When people get married, there's something called Sheva Brachos. So what happens is when a chatan and kala, they get married, there's 7 days of celebration, really. What you do is you get, you know, every night, the custom is a lot of times, people get together, they invite, it's not as big as the wedding, but they invite, I don't know, 20 people, 30 people, whatever it is, and they have a Sheva Brachos, they have a meal, and at the end, they bench over a cup of wine, and they make the same 7 blessings that were made under the chuppah, right? Which is an expression of the joy. So that's done for 7 days, because it's 7 days which are very special. Yet the halakha tells us that when you make a Shavuot brachas, other than the reception, like throughout the week, you have to have someone new that it wasn't by the wedding. You can't just invite guests that were by the wedding. Why? Because if you invite the same people every day, the simcha isn't as strong. The joy isn't as strong. You need what's called a panim chadashot, a new face. A new face adds to the excitement a little bit, right? In other words, just because it was such an amazing simcha, such amazing joy, such amazing celebration, it doesn't mean that the intensity of the celebration is going to last for 7 days, even though it applies for all 7 days, which is why halachically you can make those seven blessings. We don't just make blessings out of the blue, we only make blessings when Jewish law allows us to, right? So how do we do that? So we are told that with the exception of Shabbat, because Shabbat is always a happy time, so if you make a Shavuot brachot on Shabbat, you don't need the new face, but during the week, when you make a Shavuot brachot, you have to have a new face there. A new face adds to the joy. Why? It's again, it's an acknowledgement of the concept that intensity of emotion doesn't last all the time. You've got to reignite it all the time with something. So in that case, it's a panim chadashot, it's a new face. Other times it's about thinking about it, going through a meditative process to really understand why I was so fired up, or it's experiencing something amazing, or it's going to taking time off, and I don't know, you know, like I'm personally my own spiritual care. I do this every once in a while. I'm gonna be going at the end at the beginning of July for a trip overseas. And what I try and do is I try and switch off. I try retreat back into the yeshiva days, and I go into some sort of environment of learning, and I learn for a few hours each day, and it normally I come back normally very inspired. Does that same inspiration last for the next 10 years? No. That's why I go again, right? Because that's how we have to do that. That's how it works. So what does Hashem do? What did He design? How did He design us to overcome this problem? This is true in every part of life. It's true in relationships. Relationships need passion. For a relationship to thrive needs passion, but passion doesn't always last. We have to reignite that passion every so often, and that's why it's so important in relationship, marriage, for example, expressions of love, actions of love, love languages, all these things are so important because we have to keep reigniting the passion, but it's not always there. It's true in our own struggles, our struggles overcoming our own personality weaknesses, and it's true in our spiritual relationship, in our godly relationship with God. It's all true. All these things need emotion to fuel it, and they all don't always have the same intensity of emotion. So what does God do? He designed us with a second triangle. And that second triangle is called the functional triangle. And it's called the supportive triangle. Because it's the second triangle that kicks in when the first triangle is having a hard time. It's the ability to commit even in the absence of emotion. Full-blown emotion, right? It's also an emotion, it's a feeling, it's a commitment, it's a conviction, it's coming from the heart, but it's very different. It's much more functional. So let's give a simple example. Let's say I've been thinking about it, I'm very inspired, I want to go and engage in acts of kindness. I want to go help people, I want to go, anyway. So I'll be very excited, I'll do it for a few days, and then I won't be so excited anymore, because the original cause of inspiration is not there anymore, right? But I want to keep doing it. I know in my head that I want to keep doing it. But I wake up one morning and I'm not so excited like I was yesterday or the day before. So the second triangle kicks in, and we can explain exactly how this works. To commit. To do it anyway. To say, no, I committed. I started. I was inspired. I'm still inspired in my brain, theoretically. And I'm going to keep doing it. The power to do that comes from the second triangle. The supportive triangle. It's the ability not to be dependent completely on the intense feeling that has inspired me in the first place. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So that introduction, let's look at the first one, because the first one in a way is the main one in this whole process. So the first one of the supportive triangle, and it'll become clearer as we talk about the specific one, is the power we call Netzach. It's the right side, it's the first one of the supportive triangle. Now we'll see that on the right side you have Netzach, if you look at your second triangle. On the other side you have Hod. Hod we'll explain next week, but they are called Netzach and Hod. You know, remember I told you that the physical body Kabbalistically represents the 10 powers of the soul, so the 3 are in the brain. Right hand is Chesed, left hand is Gvura, the abdomen is Tiferet. Netzach and Hod are called the two thighs. Why are they called the two thighs? What's the function of our legs, of our thighs? It holds up the body. Right? Same thing, Netzach and Hod is what holds up the Chesed and Gevura. It allows the Chesed and Gevura to be expressed even when it's not so intense. It holds up the permanence and the consistency of what we're thinking and the values that we've processed in our brain. That's why it's called Netzach and Hod, the two thighs, the two legs, which hold up the rest of the body. Now, let's have a look at Netzach specifically. It's always good to have, first of all, have a look at the Hebrew translation of the word. The English translation of the Hebrew word, right? So the word Netzach, does anyone know what it means? We should know what it means now.
Ambition.
It could be eternal. Nitzchiyut means eternity, permanence. But what did you say, Risa?
Ambition.
Yeah, it says ambition, but actually that's a, I don't know why I put ambition there.
Yeah.
It is ambition. Victory, right. Right? Like the songs that everyone's singing now. B'yachad nunatzeach, right? With the war. Same word. We're going to be victorious. We're going to win. So victory is one. Eternity is the other. Like permanence, eternal, lasting. Sometimes people translate Netzach as endurance. We'll see, they're all connected, of course. Sometimes perseverance, ambition. So we need to understand what is the connection between all these translations. Okay. So again, let's have a look at the idea of winning, right? So let's go back to our example. I really wanted to do chesed. I wanted to do kindness. I want to be kind. I've been inspired. Something's happened. I'm really now gung-ho. I'm going to volunteer. I'm going to be kind. Right? And then it dissipates. Why does it dissipate? Why? Because, as we know, it's such a good thing. Like I was onto a good path. Why suddenly I'm weakened, right? Because we know that, especially when it comes to good things and selfless things, we have resistance. Because we each have a selflessness about us and an ego about us. We each have the godly soul and the animal soul. We have humility and we have ego. So that's what we have these two forces fighting with each other, right? The ego self isn't particularly interested in becoming kind. Right? It doesn't want to go out of itself. The ego drives us to stay within ourselves, to remain trapped, as we've spoken about many, many times. So therefore, we might be very, very inspired, and that inspiration propels us a little bit, and it tells us we've got to do it, and we understand in our brain how important it is. But there's resistance, and after a while, the resistance wears us down a little bit, right? Which is why we land up in a struggle, in an internal struggle, right? Same thing with relationships. We might be unbelievably excited. There might be an unbelievable romance, but things get in the way because not only our own ego gets in the way, other people's egos disturb our own egos. So we have a fight of egos. So suddenly that dampens the love, it dampens the romance, it dampens the relationship, right? Same thing with self-discipline. I know I shouldn't be doing certain things. I'm very inspired to apply Gevura, and I really try. And you make a New Year's resolution and you become less angry and you stop screaming at your kids or your spouse or whatever the case is. And then the ego says, no, you should scream. Right? So you got to struggle, right? And when you got to struggle, the passion dies down. That's why it dies down. So you got to reignite the passion. It's a long process. But in the meantime, what do you do? So in the meantime, we've got the supportive power called Netzach. And Netzach means to win. It's the power to win. I am going to win the struggle. I'm going to overcome the struggle because I'm going to win. Right? Because I'm committed to it. So I'm committed because I want to win the struggle. In other words, I ignite, I expose, I reveal within myself the power of commitment. Commitment means not to do it when it's going really well, when I'm really excited. Commitment means to do it no matter what happens. I'm committed. This is true in relationships as well, right? The greatness of a relationship is not that you have a beautiful relationship when things are amazing. The power of a relationship is that you're committed. Right? You're committed to everything. You're committed to the whole person. You're committed day in and day out. You're committed no matter what happens. Unless sometimes comes to an end. But you're committed even when it doesn't feel, it doesn't resonate, when it doesn't feel right, when it's not going so well, things happen, you don't understand. You're committed. And therefore, where does the commitment come from? It comes from a deep-rooted power that we have, which we're going to explain in a moment, which is the power to win. the power to overcome the struggle. It's a very, very strong. It's a very strong power. Now, let's have a look at this a bit in a bit of a deeper way. Like we had a look before, we've got three powers. Let's just summarize this. We've got the three triangles: the triangle of intellect, triangle of emotion, and then the triangle which we'll call the functional triangle, the one that gives us the commitment and the consistency. Because feeling and passion is not consistent, as we just said, right? But action could be. So commitment means I'm committed to doing it even when I don't feel like it. That's basically what it is, right? And that's okay. That can happen. It is very hard, almost impossible, to maintain the feeling consistently. In other words, chesed gvura, which is the feeling of kindness, the feeling of self-control, the feeling of discipline, the passion, the excitement, that will come and go, and that's normal. What I have to do is I have to ignite that netzach, the power to win, to commit that I'm always going to do it. And that's a possibility. That's got to do with our choice, right? We don't even choose whether to keep the passion consistently, because that's not our choice. The passion will go, will come and go. That's just the way passion works. It don't work like that, right? But the power to choose to be committed, that is a power of choice. And that's what we can do. We can always do things even though we don't want to. I can't say I'm always going to feel even though I don't want to feel that way. That's hard, because you know I'm in a bad mood one day and I don't like it. I just don't like it. I can't choose to like it. I can choose to try and re-like it. I can choose to enter into a process, whether it's to go to something else more inspirational, to recharge my batteries, to re-meditate it, and to look at why I started getting excited in the first place. But it's a process of reigniting, which takes time. But you can't choose to have consistent emotion. That just doesn't happen. We're taught in Kabbalah that very, very great people and very lofty souls, for example, can have a consistent passion of loving God all the time, 24/7. But for most people who are born to struggle, don't. Not in our godly relationship, not in our human relationship, and not in our internal struggles, right? But we can make the choice to be consistent and to be committed. However, when we look at it superficially, right? This is what I want to bring out. This is a point I want to bring out today really strongly. When we use Netzach as a support, on the surface, it looks like a second best. In other words, I don't have a choice. My excitement went away, so I don't have a choice, right? So I've got to fall back on the power of commitment. Why do I say it's a second choice? Because when we do something with passion, obviously it's better. Why is it better? Because I'm completely invested, right? And feeling and passion is really important. We always talk about this. To have a relationship without emotion is almost like a dead relationship, almost, right? That's why when we do something with, as we said, we have our mind, we have our feelings, right? We have our behavior. The truth is that the best way to be engaged in something, the optimum, the ideal, is actually to be fully invested intellectually and emotionally. To understand why this is good, to really advocate for it, to feel it, to be excited about it, because then the whole of you is there, right? When you're just committed, you're just doing it behaviorally, maybe you're not doing it with the whole of you. It shows, on the one hand, it shows a good commitment, but it seems second best. So Netzach is so important, but it seems like it's a second best time. And again, this is true in all things, like in our relationships, the passion is so excited. In our own internal personality work, being excited about it means I'm fully invested. I'm all the way there. Every part of me is working on this. And of course, spiritually, the same thing. That's why we have mitzvot. Of loving God, fearing God, respecting God. We have this idea of simcha, of joy, right? Why does it say in the pasuk, in the verse, and the Baal Shem Tov taught us with huge emphasis, that every mitzvah we do and every part of divine service that we do, we have to try and do it with great simcha, with great joy, right? This was one of the big things of the Baal Shem Tov. He introduced this. It was always the emphasis, but the idea that it's not enough just to do the mitzvah, it's not enough just to do what God wants us to do, we have to do it with joy and passion, right? Because that's the way a relationship works. So, all this is so important, so it seems that Netzach is when it fails. So when it fails, so we go to Netzach. We go to, okay, committed. Okay, I'm not in the mood, but I'll right? Very often people ask me this question about praying when they're just not in the mood. And believe me, most people are not in the mood of praying most days. Why? Because prayer is actually very hard. You know, the Zohar says that prayer is a time of war, inner struggle, right? To pray every day is very difficult. It's very monotonous. Often the words are very difficult. No one always understand them. Prayer is a struggle, unless you really work on it, right? So people say, so what's the use? Like, you know, prayer is supposed to be an emotional connection with God as part of our relationship. Prayer is about the communication to God, right? Okay, so when I'm in a good mood and I'm really in the mood of being having a good relationship with God, so I understand. Prayer is good, even understand the words. I'll talk about loving God and being connected to Him. But sometimes I wake up in the morning, I'm just not in the mood. I don't feel that. I don't feel that connection, right? It's almost like I say, I love you even though I don't feel that right now, right? You know? Husband once told me he wants to buy his wife flowers, but he's not in the mood that day. Should he buy her anyways? I said, that's the best day to buy it, right? Because you have to show commitment. But it's second best, because obviously it's better to feel it. However, it's not so simple. While everything I've just said is true, it's also not true. And let me explain why. There's a big but, right? Hasidic teachings based on Kabbalah teaches us that actually Netzach, particularly Netzach, that's what we're talking about today, which means to win, to be committed, to overcome the struggle, which means really to do it even when I don't want to do it, has, while it's missing the passion, which is not a good idea, it actually has a very deep root in our soul. Netzach comes from a very deep place, deeper than Chesed and Gevurah. In fact, they give an analogy that in the negative way, right? When you want to win something, it's a very strong emotion, right? If you ignite the power, if you bring out the power of winning, it's a very strong thing. They give, I told this to you last week, right? Hasidic teachings often gives analogies from kings. So it says when a king is fighting a war, different reasons why there's wars. In ancient times, sometimes a king decided he wants to expand the land, right? Expand the size of his country. Okay, that's one type of war. Sometimes war is, you have to, you know, the different reasons why you can fight a war. But sometimes a king fights a war because he's being threatened. Another country threatened him, so he's going to show them, right? So war is sometimes fought purely on the basis of winning. And it says that kind of war is like a very, very strong war. It's coming from a very deep place, and a king will then open the resources of the country that have been held under lock and key for generations in order not to waste them for a good rainy day. When do they come out? When there's a need to win. Sometimes we also have that. Sometimes we need to win an argument. You see, we get very passionate. Why? Because I'm not going to let you win the argument. I need to be right. Right? The power of winning in the negative is certainly very strong. But it's also very strong in always. The power to win comes from a very, very deep place. Why is that? So let's break this down. A very interesting thing that we need to understand. What we said before about being fully invested. So when I do something where my emotions are in sync with my mind, so I learned something, understood something, understand how important it is, understand why I should be doing it, understand the reason for doing it, it resonates, and I understand it, and then it ignites emotion, I get excited by it, and I really am fully there, right? So in other words, I'm invested, I'm serving it, I'm doing this relationship, whether it's a physical relationship, a godly relationship, my own relationship to myself, whatever the case is, I'm fully invested in the process, head and heart, all there, and action, fully there. It's great, right? But there's one problem. When you're fully invested in something, you understand it, you feel it, you're passionate about it, you're excited about it, even though it's about something really good, it's still you. We have to say this slowly. It's a very important, deep thing to understand. It's still you. It's you like to do it. It resonates with you. What you haven't demonstrated fully is the power of going beyond you. It could be amazing things. It could be I'm a tzaddik. It could be I'm doing mitzvot all day. And I'm so excited about it. And I love it. And I understand it. And I think it's important. But it's I think it's important. I love it. Even good things, when you're passionate about good things, when you love good things, even that is an expression subtly of self. It hasn't yet exposed an amazing ability to go beyond self. Right?
That sounds like you're out of control.
Why?
Beyond yourself.
Sorry?
It sounds like
oh, and beyond yourself? No, no, no,
no.
I don't mean beyond out of control. We'll see what I mean in a second. I'll see what
No, but it sounds like that.
I know that. So hold it.
You're making me frightened.
No. Fear isn't a good thing. You got to hold it. Right. What happens when something is important, but it no longer resonates, it no longer resonates. It no longer feels right. You no longer feels passionate about it, right? It no longer makes sense to you. You're not interested anymore, right? And there's so many obstacles in the way that make it almost not worth it. It could be internal obstacles, external obstacles. I know this is important, but it's not for me anymore, right? What happens then is netzach. But netzach means it's something deeper that comes to the forefront. It's something super rational. It's something transcendent from a very deep place that says, I know it makes no sense to me anymore, and I know I'm not excited about it anymore. But there's something that will allow me to do it permanently, to endure, to persevere. It's a power of resilience. It's a power of positive surrender, which we'll expand on a lot on Monday night. And it's a power to get it done anyway. To win the struggle and to be committed. Now, what this means is, when I ignite this power of winning, what it looks like is an emotionless experience, but actually it's coming from a very, very deep place. The place to say, you know what, it's not about me. It's about the cause. It's about the purpose. It's about the relationship. It's about what's higher than me. It's the ability of the human being to surrender something greater than self. Is when you don't understand, and it doesn't resonate, and it doesn't make any sense. That's where that power kicks in. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that doesn't mean that that's a permanent state of being, or should be a permanent state of being, because emotion is important. Being fully invested is important. Understanding is important. It's all important. But when it's no longer there, maybe that's the purpose why sometimes it's not there, is to allow us to reveal something that's even deeper. We call it, in the classic terminology, we call it Kabbalat Ol. Compliance, but compliance is something higher than me, which is the ultimate of a human being. The ultimate of a human being is actually to say that I'm limited, I'm finite, to have the strength. It's not a weakness, it's a strength to say I am a limited, finite, mortal person. I have the opportunity and the gift to connect to something greater than myself. And when is that fully expressed? So it's expressed when I am excited about doing something selfless rather than selfish, of course. But when is the ultimate expression of that? When I submit to doing something that I don't want to do anymore. But I know it's right. Deep down, I know it's right. Now this could be, again, this could be in everything. It could be in a relationship. In other words, sometimes when you do something in a relationship just because it's right, even though you've like annoyed that day, or you don't want to, or you're not in the mood that day, the love isn't there, the romance isn't there, the feeling isn't there, the willingness isn't there, and you do it anyways, what you've done is you've actually committed to something deeper in the relationship. You're showing you're not there only for yourself, you're there to make the relationship work. And we know that relationships thrive on selflessness. Now, selflessness doesn't mean disappearance of self, but it means the ability to do for another, the ability to invest for another, to ability to put someone else first sometimes, to make space for someone else. What is the greatest expression of doing that? When I don't want to do it. That's the greatest expression. That's why netzach is so strong. It results in sometimes an emotionless experience, true, or one that's lacking passion at least. But it's replaced by something deeper. I am going to show commitment. I'm going to win this war of ego. I'm going to win over myself. I'm going to connect to something that's deep and beyond myself. Whether it's the selflessness of the relationship, whether it's sometimes doing something that I know I need to do for my own personality growth, my own inner struggle growth, my own journey, and I'm doing it even though I'm really not in the mood. I really want to punch the guy in the face, but I'm really going to hold back and not do it, even though I don't want to. Right? When you're in the mood of being very, very selfless, okay, so you won't get angry in the first place. You make room. But let's say I'm not, you know, and someone said something that I'm really annoyed by. And I'm saying, I want to make a call to this person, but I really don't like him. Really. But I know it's kind of good for the cause to do this, right? And you do it anyway. It's very deep. So you've really gone beyond yourself. Even though you're doing it without any emotion, without being in the mood, you don't want to do it, you don't understand why you should do it, but you know deep down that that's what should be done. Right? That shows something, it comes from a very, very deep place. It's going out of your way. It's going beyond yourself. We have this, you know, there's a fascinating idea in Hasidic teaching that goes like this. In the Torah itself, this is how it works spiritually as well. There's a famous verse in the Torah that says that Moses was the most humble person. Right? Moshe anav me'od mikol adam. He was the most humble person. And all the commentaries ask, what does that mean? What does humility mean? What does it mean he was humble? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was not foolish. He understood that he was the greatest prophet that ever lived. He understood that his level of prophecy was far greater than any other prophet. He understood that he was the only one that had that direct communication with God in a deeper and unbelievable, powerful way that no one else would ever have. He knew all of that. So what does it mean he was humble? And there are many explanations. One of the explanations is that it says in a midrash that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown a vision of history. Shown a vision of what to come, right? He's shown a vision of different generations of people. People that were not able to reach anywhere near the level of his generation. People that lived in generations like us, it says he was shown the generations far down the line, I guess us, right? He was shown us living in a world where it's hard to be spiritual, where it's hard to be connected, where we don't have spiritual and divine consciousness like he had. And he thought to himself, you know, I'm on an unbelievable level, but I have the gift of divine revelation internally in my soul at all times. So obviously I love God. Obviously I'm on this level. But it says, and the way it's written is that Moshe Rabbeinu saw into the future and he saw Jews living in a time of persecution, physical persecution and spiritual persecution, where there's a distortion of values, where there's a move away from belief in God, where there's a complete shift away from religion and away from purpose and away from meaning. I think they were talking about 2024 in that midrash. I'm not sure, but I think so, right? And he saw a world where there was such confusion and lack of clarity. And then he saw people still coming to Hashir, still being committed, and still davening, and still doing a mitzvah, and still being kind to each other, even when they don't have the support, the emotional support like he had. And he felt humble. He says, why? Because he saw how Jews are living today. He saw living in a world where there's every intellectual reason to move away from Judaism, to move away from God, and yet they're not doing it. Something irrational, something from the resilience of the soul, the deep down of the soul, is pushing them, on the contrary, to become more Jewish, especially post October 7th. And Moshe Rabbeinu felt humble. Why? What did he see? He saw people having the opportunity in the spiritual context of Netzach to surrender to something greater, when he thought to himself that he never had that opportunity because his chesed and gevurah was on steroids, because his chachma, bina, and das were on steroids. And therefore, the necessity of revealing the deep rooted power of the commitment and the endurance and the perseverance and the resilience of the neshama of the soul, he didn't need to do that. He didn't need that surrender because he had it, he's understood it. It fully resonated with him because he had such divine consciousness. But he saw us and he saw people like us who often don't have the passion, who found it hard to say a prayer, who found it hard to go and do a mitzvah and to do something spiritual or do a favor for another person or overcome the internal struggles or swim against the tide of the society, and he saw them doing it anyway. He felt humble. What did he see? He saw the Netzach. Hasidus tells us, Hasidic teachers tell us, that's what he saw. He saw the power of Netzach. He saw the simple soldiers. It's like, who wins in a battlefront? It's not the strategists and the people who have it. It's the simple guys. It's the simple soldiers following orders. What are they doing? They're surrendering. Okay, they have no choice there, but in terms of, we choose to surrender. And that's something very, very deep. Should we try and not operate only on Netzach? Of course we should. We should try as much as we possibly can on our level to invest our thinking, to invest our emotion, and to be excited about it, and to understand. True, all that's true. But at the same time, we should never undervalue. It's not second best. When we don't, in the absence of emotion, the idea of commitment and endurance and perseverance and doing it anyway, it comes from a very deep place and exposes the power to surrender to something that's beyond ourselves. Because we're not doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for a purpose. because we don't want to do it for ourselves. We don't understand it, we don't feel it. I'm sure like others, and I spoke about it very briefly in my little video yesterday, I'm sure many of you have watched the documentary, right? The documentary on anti-Semitism. I think it's a very important documentary, very confronting. I mean, it's many things that we know already, but when you put it all together like that, it's actually quite confronting. And I'm hoping that its main purpose is to expose it to people who don't understand these things, and especially to those in power, to stop schluffing, as they say in Yiddish, to stop sleeping, actually do something about it, right? So don't get me wrong, I think it's an incredibly important documentary, and I think it's very, very important. But I was thinking to myself about how do we respond to it, my own response to it, right? Because I have to say, even myself, and I've been talking about not doing this, right? When you watch it, you actually get shaken up a little bit, like, it's really bad. And of course, you know, as we know, it conjures up things that up until now, people of our age only read in history books, which is, you know, conjure up images from the way things started to get under control in Germany and all that kind of stuff. That's all true. But we have to think about that. We have to think about our response, because intellectually, logically, that's a legitimate response. Fear, having a sick feeling in your stomach. I'm talking about now this collective netzach that we need to have, right? So in other words, it's the kind of thing you watch, and therefore you're not motivated to be hopeful. You're not motivated to be optimistic necessarily, on an intellectual level, on an emotional level, even, right? I can fully understand anyone watching that video and walks away scared and fearful, and maybe even a bit despair. But we are the generation of netzach. This is what we have to remember. We are the generation of netzach. We don't work on our brain. We don't even work on our emotion. We work from a very deep place of endurance, commitment, faith, and winning. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I wanted to highlight this today because it fitted into the shiur, but it's important on its own right. Right? That actually our response has to be completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. Our response is, this is what it is. This is how bad it is. Yep. Let's strengthen more. Let's be more positive. Mm-hmm. Let's win more. Let's be more Jewish. Let's be more hopeful. Let's be more optimistic. Let's spread more light. Let's spread more love. Let's spread more goodness. That's what our response has to be. So yes, I'm not in denial. It's a very, very confronting video. But we have the power of Netzach. That when it doesn't make sense, we fight back. And we learn from those that came before us in history. I've often told you the story because I'm always very, from a young age, I've always been amazingly blown away from this hero, the Hasidic Rebbe called the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And I've told you that he built the hospital after the war. I've told you many times, right? Yeah. But he did this right away. He did this in the DP camps. I don't know if you know the story. As he was liberated, a person who lost everything, he lost a wife and 11 children. And he was a great rabbi before the war. He was a young person, but he was an amazing Torah scholar and great rabbi, right? He didn't say, I need 3 years to like overcome, I got to think this through. In the DP camps, he said, we've got to fight back right away. Rebuild right away. He took children and started teaching them Aleph Beis to read. These are children who didn't have an education. Children survivors who had nothing. They didn't know the Aleph of it. You know, some of them knew the Shema Yisrael, where they learned when they were 2 years old or something. But they didn't know anything. And he right away made a cheder in the DP camps. A big general, I've forgotten the name because they were freed, visited the DP camps from America, one of the American generals, and he was there. And someone introduced him to him. And it was before Sukkot. It's an amazing story. And of course, you know, these were people who lost everything. They were displaced. They didn't have anything. They didn't have they had nothing to their name. I mean, they came out of the war with nothing, right? And the general made a thing, and he said, Rabbi, what can we bring for the people? What can we bring for the communities? And he got up and he made a whole speech. He says, it's coming Sukkot, and we need a lulav and an etrog, and we don't have. Right? Why? He says, it's been years now. Or for him, it wasn't so years, he was hungry, but it's been a few years, we haven't seen anything Jewish. What did he do? Where was the thinking? There was no thinking. It didn't come from his head. It didn't come from his heart even. He was very passionate about it, but it didn't, right? But it came from Netzach. It came from this amazing, miraculous, deep-rooted ability of Netzach that we have deep down in our soul. That when it doesn't make sense, when it doesn't resonate, when we're not interested anymore, when the logical thing is to say, this is just too hard, failed experiment, let's leave it around and try something else, we say no. And that's what's kept us. That's why we're still here. Rabbi Akiva did this. The Klausenberger Rebbe did this. The people in the Crusades did this. We just fought back. God forbid anything more than has already happened should happen, but it won't happen. We have to have faith that it won't. Israel will prevail and emerge very strong. But even ourselves, as when we see this rise of anti-Semitism, it is logical to be fearful. But that's not us. We are a generation of Netzach. And that's such an important concept. Right? I've told you often that the what's that? Now, this is who we are. So we are like that on a collective level. We need to like that individual level. The same thing with our relationships. By the way, we are like that collectively as a nation, very, very deep down. That's who we are. That's why we're still here. But on an individual level, we live in a society where Netzach is disappearing. It's the opposite. People are interested in commitment. People are interested in doing things that are hard. That's why there's such a relationship breakdown today. One of the reasons. As soon as it gets most difficult, I'm out of here. There's no commitment. There's no, and we have it. The human being has it. We have the spark of resilience and endurance and perseverance. Every human being has it. Okay, we as a Jewish people have it as a nation, and we have it spiritually, we have it godly in a godly way. But every person has this. It's a part of the human design, right? We just need to know how to bring it out. You don't just give up things just because they're a little bit not working, you know what I'm saying? So it's true with our own struggles, it's true about not giving up in our own growth. People say it's too hard. I can't. No, you've got to keep going. We have this, we have to expose within deep within our own individual journey this power to win. It's power to overcome, whether it's relationships, within our own struggle, whatever it might be, but we have it and we can use it, and it is swimming against the tide, that's true. But that's who we are, and that's what we can do.
Someone said to me the other day, you know, and this is exactly how I feel at the moment, I hate the world. The world just doesn't make sense.
Correct.
But this person said, we are the light. And it's how it should feel.
Yeah, how you should feel, how you choose to feel. But it's about, as I say, that's why I say we live in a generation of Netzach. This is what we have to use now, even though it doesn't always make sense.
No.
But that's what we can do. Now, the power of Netzach, like everything, I'll just finish with this and we'll continue next week, can also be used for the bad, as we know. Because the power of Netzach is to win, and it goes together with the other translation of Netzach, which is ambition. Ambition, by the way, is a good thing, but ambition can be a terrible thing. When you want to achieve something that's more selfish and more material and more mundane, and you're very ambitious about it, and you have the power to win, and many people are, many people have Netzach by default, in a negative way, that they will achieve any purpose, no matter what the damage on the way, because it's done very selfishly. No matter who I eliminate or undermine during the way, no matter who I hurt along the journey, right? So now the question is, I've just described this amazing power of Netzach, even though on the surface it seems like an emotionless thing, but it's actually the power of commitment, the power of conviction, the power to win. But how do we make sure that we use it out for the good and not for the bad? And that's where the second part of the triangle comes in, the Hod, which we'll expand on and elaborate next week, but we need the balance between the Netzach and the Hod, and then it works. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. Good. I knew you would.